Price, Beyond the Dark, on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Ladies and gentlemen, Beyond the Dark, we're going over to New Zealand and we're going to speak to Jonathan Gray. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Peter.
Before we start talking about you and the book and your fascinating ideas, please tell us how things are in New Zealand after that dreadful problem that you've just had.
Yes, well, just a few months ago, the city of Christchurch, which is in the South Island, the second largest city in New Zealand, was hit with a very bad earthquake, but they'd been doing a lot of repair work, and suddenly, just as they're well underway with that, comes this monster of earthquakes, over 6 on the Richter scale, 6.3 I think it is, and this time some of the best, or one in particular of the icons of Christchurch that's been there for 150 years, one of the first and largest buildings in the city, has been destroyed, and that's the Christchurch Cathedral. They've lost quite a lot of that, and more people have been killed, and no one was hurt in the first earthquake or killed, but this time, last report was 65 dead, but that's last night. I haven't got an update yet.
The problem is, with any earthquake, there's nowhere to go, is there? There's nowhere to run. It's just, you don't know, it's Mother Nature taking over, and there's no control.
Yes, we're so helpless. Mankind is just puny compared with such huge forces.
Whereabouts are you in New Zealand?
I'm in Thames, named by Captain Cook on his first visit to New Zealand after the River Thames in London. In the North Island, we're 600 miles north of Christchurch, so the only way we knew about it was by the news.
Right. I'm talking to Jonathan Gray, and the programme, of course, is Beyond the Dark. Jonathan, you're a fascinating man. Tell everybody who you are, apart from being an international explorer.
Well, Peter, I actually am an archaeologist. I have been for over 40 years. My first expedition was down into the unexplored areas of the Amazon headwaters in eastern Ecuador. And more recently, we've done work throughout Asia and the Middle East. I also have published just over 50 books, and I frequently do broadcasts and lectures.
Now, you've got some interesting theories over history, haven't you?
Yes.
Do tell us about them.
Well, I was writing a book on history some years ago, and my research took me to more than 30 countries. It was a global history. And I expected that I would just follow the traditional pathway, but gradually, as I began to dig into the depth of information, I saw inexplicable, out-of-place artifacts and knowledge that, according to our present theories, just should not have existed in the past.
Please explain. I don't understand.
Yes. For example, down in the Amazon, I went among some native tribes, and they showed me, and I handled some Egyptian hieroglyphics on metal plates, which they had received from people coming across the ocean to trade with the people in South America, and these were 4,000 or 5,000 years old, and that certainly intrigued me. But I pushed it aside because there was no way of explaining it by our traditional means. And then I came across evidence of ever-burning lights that never went out, and the knowledge of aerodynamics and flight, and advanced medicine, that's 21st century quality medicine. And these things, I just kept pushing them aside, but there soon there became so many of them, it was not just one out-of-place event, there were thousands of them. So I realized then I just had to stop everything I was doing, and this became my new direction, to get to the bottom of these out-of-place artifacts all over the world. I was discovering a global pattern in them.
What did your peers think about your ideas?
Oh, well, those that knew me well were aware that I'm always very thorough, and I don't take anything just on hearsay or theory. I insist on evidence. Now, those who don't know me so well, of course, were very sceptical, a lot of them, because, and that's understandable, because it went against what we're being told in the universities and schools and colleges. And so archaeology has been divided now into two camps, those who can cope with these new discoveries and those who just shut the door on them because it destroys everything that they've gained their degrees and their qualifications upon, so they just cannot accept it.
So when you found what was going on and you realised there was a pattern, what were your conclusions? What were you starting to think?
Well, it appeared that there was once a worldwide civilization. The pattern itself began to bring that out. Now, I should mention that there are two types of archaeologists, and just as you might say, we have specialist doctors in the medical profession and general practitioners. On equivalent, I suppose most archaeologists are specialists in their particular local field or a topic of interest. Well, I could not follow that pathway when I saw these worldwide patterns. So I became a global archaeologist, linking and trying to make sense of the design or the pattern that was becoming very, very evident. And that was the ultimate direction I have been taking since then. It's a global thing, and we look for a global past with a global civilization.
Tell us about Dead Men's Secrets, your new book.
Dead Men's Secrets was the result of 12 years investigation in over 30 countries. It contains more than 1,000 lost secrets of the ancient races on all continents, from Antarctica right up to Europe, Americas, Australia, Asia and Africa.
Is it not difficult proving your theories?
Well, there are three types of evidence that we look at. There's oral traditions, there are written records, and there are physical items. So if somebody's sceptical, I like to zero in on the physical evidence because no one can deny what they're seeing and touching and smelling.
What would people get from reading this book? Would they be shocked? Would they be sceptical? Would they think you were mad?
Well, I'm sure that there are some who would think I'm crazy. We're finding that generally, all over the world, there's a very good reception to the evidence in this book. Most people say, wow, I never knew this happened before, because I try to present it in an easy-to-follow format and concentrate as much as possible on evidence that can be checked by other sources.
What was the biggest surprise? What was the one that made you most excited?
I think, Peter, the most exciting one to me is probably the biggest secret of archaeology, and that is the international tunnel systems, very, very sophisticated tunnels that go for not just 20 or 30 miles, but hundreds of miles, on most continents of the Earth, underground, linking very interesting spots at both ends.
And how would they have been built?
Well, what we find here with these tunnel systems is that they're partly natural, but large areas of them are linked up by man-made tunnels that go for hundreds of miles and which have walls, walls that appear to have been burnt by something akin to laser beams rather than cutting instruments. And there's no rubble at all evident on the inside or outside of the tunnels. It's just as though the rock was burnt and hollowed out by some kind of advanced equipment.
These things you find out, do they actually take over your life? Do you get to the stage where you actually can't have a life because you just want to find out more and more and more and it takes over?
Oh, you've hit the nail on the head, Peter. Yes, sometimes I just lie awake at night thinking about these things and wondering and planning. It's so exciting. Sometimes I just cannot sleep, Peter. It really is wonderful.
Do you work with a team or do you work alone?
I largely work alone, but when I'm taking an expedition somewhere, I gather people. I've got a good contact with lots of people who are experts in their own fields, geologists and so on. And they come in with me, not always the same people, but expeditions, we bring people together. My other work is largely alone, the research that I do independently. Although I do get a lot of feedback from other people who know that I'm looking out, and they tell me what they've discovered in their areas, and we investigate it.
How does an international explorer actually get funding to go on these expeditions?
That's virtually impossible. We have to fund ourselves. In my particular work, every member of my expeditions pays his own expenses, but we pull our resources together to make an impact when we arrive.
When you were in the Amazon, did you not meet people that were hostile towards you?
Oh, yes. We did. In fact, we went into an area, ultimately, where there were only 10 villagers, all maybe a day or two's tramping through the jungle from each other, and they believed that was their whole world. They were not aware of the outside world at all. We came in like freaks, and when we got into the earlier villages, the people were hiding. We got in, we found the villages empty, but we felt they were watching us. As we got in further, they were hostile in the sense that they threatened us at first, but when we showed friendship to them, they let us in and we lived with them. But they were very, very cautious always.
Have you ever...
And we knew that witch doctors there, if something had gone wrong and anyone had an accident or got sick, they would always point the finger at any visitor. And that would be the end of us. But we got through, no problem. We survived it, and it was a very wonderful experience.
When you discovered these thousands of pieces of evidence that have moved and not in the right place, and you wrote the book Dead Men's Secrets, have you found anybody on this earth that doesn't want this this information put out there?
Yes, mainly people connected with universities, believe it or not.
Why is that?
Well, let me give you an example. Up in the north coast of Queensland, Australia, which was my base for most of my life, a friend of mine, Val Osborne, was researching up there in Serena, which is a sugar country. And he came across what he was convinced were the remains of a Phoenician settlement with docking for ships and houses and graves and images, all sorts. He went to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, ABC, and they actually presented his discovery on the prime time news, 6 o'clock news, and it was received very, very well. And one of the universities in Queensland was shocked by this thing which came out under their nose, and they didn't know about it. So they sent one of their archaeologists up to Serena with instructions that he would come back and then publicly declare that there was nothing up there, and that Val Osborne was a charlatan. Well, after that, Val Osborne was discredited publicly, and now, of course, there are a lot of people know he's found the truth, but... the reason is that Captain Cook had to be the first person to discover Australia, or that part of Australia. Europeans were there first, not Egyptians, and not Phoenicians, and that's taught in the universities, and they can't have that undermined.
I'm talking to Jonathan Gray, has a book out called Dead Men's Secrets, one of 50 books. Jonathan, what is left for you to do?
Well, without prior planning, my work seems to be expanding as it raises more questions. The questions keep coming in. People ask me about how old are these things, and that's a subject on its own that could probably occupy a lifetime. We have to prove conclusively a time frame for these to gain credibility with some people, and so a lot of my research is dating things. And Another one is relating this to our modern civilizations of what we are trying to achieve here, like ways of lifting heavy weights. We're using the sledgehammer approach today. The ancients can teach us a thing or two about an easier way to do things.
What do you want people to take from the book Dead Men's Secrets when they've read it?
I'd like people to take from the book the fact that we have ancestors who were not dumb savages dragging their women around by the hair and living in caves and clubbing each other. But these people were sophisticated, and even cavemen were people who had to escape or were survivors from previous civilizations that had been destroyed. I want people to know that our past has been magnificent. And we've got something to be proud of about our ancestors.
Tell me, you have a very open mind, and understandably, when you've done the work you've done, what is your belief about people living on other planets or beings?
I do believe that it would be a silly idea to think that of all the millions of planets in the solar system, in the universe, that we are the only one that's inhabited. I certainly believe in other inhabited worlds. However, my evidence that's coming to me now is that we are not being visited from these, but that there is another thing happening. And therefore, although there are beings on other worlds, our Earth is not under attack or visit from the other worlds.
I must ask, and I was always brought up to say that we do all these things. We try to go to the moon, we try to go to Mars, and yet the oceans have never been properly explored. Do you believe in that?
Oh, you're quite right. Yes, well, we know very little about the oceans.
Is there a reason for that? People like yourself who have inquiring minds, why do people not concentrate more on the oceans?
I can't answer that. My opinion is simply that we still haven't explored everything on the land surface of the Earth, let alone the oceans. The oceans are a little more difficult, of course, because the water is involved. But I should state that despite that, there are some wonders that have been found. Archaeology, underwater archaeology, is finding things that are worth pursuing further. And there are hundreds of ancient cities under the sea around the coastlines of the world today.
Do you believe, Jonathan, that young people want to do what you do? Are we getting new young explorers?
Well, yes. I frequently get emails from the young people who want to know how to get into this kind of work, and lots of requests to work with me. Of course, I can't afford them, but I wish them well and tell them that they've got to start independently looking outside the mainstream if they want to get the truth about their past. And a lot of them are doing that now.
I must say that talking to you, what has jumped into my mind, that one of the greatest histories has got to be the Chinese, and it's hidden. Surely there must be some very big secrets in China.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. We have evidence of X-rays, of television, of space travel, such as visits to the moon by the Chinese in the past. And these can be and also world surveys. The Chinese explored North America around 2000 BC, and they named every river, mountain, and physical feature, and their descriptions, which are 4,000 years old, can be used as a roadmap throughout North America today.
Jonathan, I've heard many theories about the pyramids. What is your theory about how they were built?
The Egyptians tell us that. I mean, today, of course, we have the system of pulleys, and rollers and ramps. But I don't believe that at all. That's how the later pyramids were built, the smaller ones in the later generations after the technology was lost. But the early Egyptians tell us that they used to lift weights by the use of sound waves, Peter. And If we go to South America and we go to the Pacific and we go to Asia, we find that there's independent evidence that the ancient races knew about sound waves and their ability to adjust the atomic structure of an object so it would be able to be lifted easily.
Wow. Have you any backup for a statement like that?
Oh, yes. Yes, even today, scientists are beginning to look at this idea, and and sound waves have been used experimentally in motor car engines to lighten the petrol so that it can last longer. There are quite a few experiments going on in different parts of the world with sound waves and their ability to change the atomic structure of a substance so that it can be used in a different way.
Jonathan, how do they buy the book Dead Men's Secrets?
My website is beforeus.com. That's www.beforeus.com. Before Us.
You're a fascinating man. What's the next book for you?
I'm bringing out a book called The Forbidden Secret. It should be hitting the bookshelves in England in about 2 months' time, in April. And it's the largest book I've ever written, probably the most important. And it deals with a number of myths that are very popular today and explodes them and points us in a new direction. And I think it's going to cause some waves.
Will you come on and let me interview you again when the book comes out?
Oh, I'd be very pleased to do that, Pete.
Jonathan, thank you so much for talking to us. The book is called Dead Men's Secrets, and it's Jonathan Gray. You're a fascinating man. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Peter.
Late Night City with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.